What's the most sustainable way to love fashion? It's changing the way you shop by shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury resale. When you shop with The RealReal, you'll find the luxury brands you love, like Prada, Celine, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail. And when you're ready to refresh your wardrobe, you can sell the pieces you no longer wear to fund your next new to you finds. Buy, sell, repeat. Guilt-free. The RealReal extends the life cycle of luxury by keeping coveted items in rotation. Sell to shop, shop to sell with The RealReal. It's better for the planet and better for your closet. Plus, during Earth Month, you can earn $100 extra when you sell with The RealReal. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn $100 extra during the entire month of April at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Well, we feel like it uncommon. This sort of effect is fine. No. Like, give me a break.
And you were like, wrong, you're fired.
If I was. Like, what? How? That just breaks everything they've ever done about this. Like, hidden in the graveyard. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is known Bombard hater, Ethan Unsubtle Mockery Sacks. We finally got him, boys. We got him.
All you had to do was tack on Surveil 1 to it, and I'm into it.
Love to hear it. I love some Unsubtle Mockery.
I don't know if your ears were burning on Thursday morning, so I recorded our bonus episode of Lords Unlimited solo this week. I did just sort of a like post early access info dump. It was great because I was like, I know Ben will never listen to this, so I can say like, oh, he was right about this card, he was right about that card, but I don't have to say that to you today.
Well, I can't. Much like LSV, I'm not subscribed to our Patreon, so I don't get it. I just literally, I would listen to it. I was actually thinking, I kind of wish I could listen to this. So if you want some Lords Unlimited in your life, get in that Patreon action.
There it is. Ben, I miss you. You were right. You were just right here last week.
It was nice. It was good.
Wrap my arm around you. Get that Ben Warney Musk. No more.
Musk.
How's your week been? And more importantly, I mean, we'll get to it, but how was your early access / pre-release this week?
My week was absurd. So we had beginning band registration. So like Tuesday and Wednesday, that went till 9 o'clock. Monday, we had a parent meeting. In the middle of all that, we were interviewing to hire for our new position, like having our top two candidates come in and teach the middle school classes. I made an offer to one of those folks. Didn't hear back from them for over 24 hours, which was extremely stressful because I assumed they were just going to ghost us at that point. But then like turns out they had like two different numbers on their resume and my principal picked the wrong one. So now like been extremely stressed about all of that. So Wednesday night, I did not start early accessing until like 10:30 or 11 p.m. because Catherine also got some bad news. Her bridal shower is this weekend and her family was unable to make it. So I was just like,
oh no,
being with her through all that. So it's been an extremely stressful week. And to the surprise of no one, I was exhausted when I started early accessing and promptly 06'd my first two drafts and had literal nothing to bring to the podcast. This is unacceptable. I can't do this. So I took half a personal day on Thursday and skip school. So my ears weren't burning, but I was playing magic so that I could contribute meaningfully to the podcast.
I just did
like four or five more drafts on Thursday morning. I got up and drafted and I've got some thoughts that are actually helpful now.
Excellent. Well, I also did some losing and I have some thoughts that I think will be helpful because I have a perspective about why said losing was occurring. Let's do a little housekeeping before we dive in to the meat of the episode. Chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited. It's where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. A lot of sweet stuff happening over at the Lords of Limited Patreon. You get access to our Discord, which is not only just a great community of like-minded limited individuals, but there's some additional perks happening over at the Discord. I did an early access stream to the Discord on Wednesday, which was really awesome to get to hang out with about, I don't know, a couple dozen of our Discord folks there. I will try and make those a bit more advanced scheduling so that people can know before, you know, oh, I'm about to go live. Though I think there will also be some impromptu Discord streams. So doing some streams to Discord now. We're going to be throwing out a monthly gameplay review video on YouTube, which folks in the Discord will have access to submit gameplays situations to be reviewed. So excited for that. I'm going to be rolling out one of those videos this week. You get access to our podcast feed where you get not only this episode a day early ad free, but also access to the aforementioned bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited. We're going to be doing the Bachelor Party recap this week, in addition to talking about Magic. So if any or all of that sounds exciting to you, if you want to check out the podcast feed for a 7-day free trial, you can do that. All of that's available at Patreon. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Adam, Ira, Jason, Sam, Decimus, David, Brian, Ethan, Petter, Aubrey, Ben, Avery, Raging Goblin, and Mike. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Truly cannot say thank you enough. When I looked at this, I saw the Ben first, and I immediately, my eyes went up to see if there was an Ethan. There was an Ethan, and then I heard Jeff Probst's voice in my head, one vote Ethan, one vote Ben. The votes are tied.
The votes are tied. Yeah, it's true. It's nice. The balance is good in the force this week. Updates after early access. I have a lot. You have a lot. Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the top, unless you've got some things. I didn't see much added to the old notes here. You're coming off the dome.
You're my big picture guy. I just read through this, and I was like, this is what he does. This is my big picture Ben Wernie King is like putting together the bird's eye view, the forest for the trees of the format. And I'll be in there with, yeah, but did you know this card does that?
I think the thing that stood out to me the most about the format is that, again, and this has been a fairly frequent occurrence lately that I don't love, is that there's a pretty sizable gap between the cards that determine the games and the cards that don't, in my opinion. Like, there's about maybe 10 commons that matter truly, and then like just falls off a cliff as far as like card quality in the commons go. And just as far as what you, I think, should be thinking about when you're drafting the format, I think I got myself in a lot of trouble, and I'm curious to see what you think happened to you. I think you're either supposed to draft a two-color college that's open, like if you want to be the one in that college, whatever it is, I don't care which of the five, if it's open, you want to be in it, and you want to have a lot of redundant pieces for whatever that college is trying to do. Like, I did not have a lot of success, nor did I see a lot of success from just loose synergies kind of coming together. Whatever, like, let's say Witherbloom. You want like several two drops that let you gain life. You want a bunch of other ways to gain life, and you want a lot of redundant pieces of life gain payoff. If Witherbloom's only kind of open, and you have like a pocket of life gain synergy, The power that your pocket of life gain synergy provides, just I don't think is anywhere near enough to compete with the entry-level power that's required to compete in the format.
An entry-level power that you're seeing as required to compete is based on just individual card power level rather than synergies coming together. Like, you're just saying, well, there's just some nuts so uncommons and certainly some nuts rares and mythics that you're going to have to contend with, that like doing A plus B synergies at the common level isn't going to get there.
I think the synergy can, but it's got to be redundant. Like, it's got to happen every time, because if it doesn't happen every time and you're playing those synergy pieces, you do just get out card quality by the good cards. If the thing that you're trying to do doesn't quite come together, I think you end up in an extremely bad spot as far as like at the end of the draft. There's not much you can do to salvage your deck if your plan was to do this synergy thing and you don't have tons of redundant pieces to do that synergy thing.
Well, and to your point about finding the open college, like the way you get that redundancy is wheeling cards like Inkling Mascot when you're in Silverquill, the white black 2/2 common. With Repartee, it gets flying and you surveil one. The difference between like fighting over that or not having enough twos or having to put mediocre, non-college appropriate two drops in your deck versus like, I've got Scolding Administrator and I'm wheeling Inkling Mascots. Like, that's the redundancy you need. And that's why being in an open college is so powerful.
Correct. The other option, I think, which is you just, if you're in a high powered draft, you can just draft a lot of good cards and a lot of interaction. You could still be a two-color college deck, just less focused on enacting a very specific style of game plan or a very specific style of synergy. From what I've seen so far, that would be my preference currently. I think if you're chasing a high synergy deck, this is where I got myself in trouble. I think that can be really harmful. The drafts where I found myself thinking, well, it's pack three and I just need more of X. and whatever X is, whether that's Bogwater Lumerites for Witherbloom, because that's such an easy example. Bogwater Lumerite is the black-green 2/2 that whenever another creature enters, you gain one life. And if I didn't get that in pack three, like my deck just basically rolled over and didn't function. Like not only did it not have a great curve, it also didn't have consistent ways to enable the life gain synergy that I was trying to do. And then all of my cards that I thought were going to be above rate were below rate.
Well, and not all of the colleges, and maybe this is actually kind of a boon to something like Quandrix, which I think we still both have questions about, but the increment mechanic like can't really fall flat. Like maybe if you could go too hard in the I care about plus and plus one counters synergy area and not get there. But like increment itself is just going to happen. Repartee kind of can just happen depending on like the amount. There's a lot of tricks, but then there's also a good number of prepared creatures where the spell will trigger your repartee. You certainly can have an issue there. Something like Lorehold, I think, has a real problem depending on how much you're trying to lean into the leave the graveyard thing. Is like you can really have a I just need more of X problem. And then you also have that same problem in the games of I have to draw X and Y in the right ratio together.
Yeah, when there are people who are just going like premium 2-drop into 3-drop rare, into good 4-drop uncommon, into removal spell, kill
you. Yeah.
Like that I think is my preferred way to play games in the format currently.
I also would want to say that to your point about this draft a lot of good cards and interaction, it has to start with good cards. This is an evergreen sentiment, but I got myself into this trouble too because I drafted a couple uncommons that were pointing me towards doing Converge / differently named lands. I had Snarl Song, which is the two fractals and gain life equal to Converge. And I had this Emil, which is a 2 and a green 3/3 uncommon that lets you poop out fractals equal to the number of differently named lands you control. And I had two of those early and I was like, oh, cool. I can draft a like Converge / different named lands multicolor stoop deck. But if I don't see rares that are good after that, my deck is terrible. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I do think Snarl Song meets the power level bar for the format. Emil, I don't think does at all.
I agree. So yeah, but to your point, that whole draft, I was like, I could just use another Snarl Song. Really like another Snarl Song. And then it never showed up. So yes, yeah. I agree.
That's how the draft looks, big picture to me. Like either identify an open college, go hard after whatever that college is trying to do, reap the rewards of wheeling consistent pieces for your deck and making sure your deck's really redundant, or high power level, a lot of good cards, a lot of interaction.
I'm thinking I'm much more in the camp of I'll take Eclipsed Elf into Eclipsed Merfolk into whatever. Like I just want to take most powerful cards out of each pack, color commitment be darned, because something will present itself and I want to make sure I am as open to either most powerful stuff tied together or finding what the open college is.
I do think this format is significantly different than Lorwyn Eclipsed in terms of like density of gold cards.
No, it's just, it's crazy. Like I was thinking on Wednesday, I was like, I really want to try out this Rakdos deck that I've been scheming and dreaming about.
No chance.
It's impossible to imagine there being a sixth college in this set, with there being 10 multicolor cards for each college at non-rare. You're just so incentivized to find the open one or fight over one with someone else at the table. Like, it's just really hard to imagine having a deck that can compete on power level that's not a supported college.
That's kind of where I'm at as well. But one of the things that we did a lot when we had Guilds of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance back to back is when are the gold cards signals and can you jump ship for them? And I think a lot of that stuff holds true here. So just trying to remind yourself that the powerful late gold cards, and I'm not talking about the mediocre commons or like kind of the middling uncommons, but if you see a card that is one of the better gold cards for a college, I think starting pick, maybe even pick 4 if it's a premium one, but picks 5 through 8. Or if you're starting to see one of the other things we talked about a lot back in those days was just a density of gold cards. And maybe the premium ones didn't get open. Think about jumping ship for that open college, especially if you don't have a high power level start to the draft.
Yes, I definitely agree with that.
And then another huge takeaway for me, I think, from early access was I did have a pretty rigid view of what I thought the decks were going to look like, you know, because we do so much studying during leading up to early access for the crash course, that sort of thing. I think, oh, OK, I can build a deck that looks like this and would, for example, like I in my brain think Bogwater Lumerite is very important to Witherbloom as far as like comes down on turn two, gains you a life, and then it's going to be repeated life gain triggers to help your synergy for the rest of the game. It's really tough, I think, to go into a college for the common gold cards. Like even as key as Bogwater Lumeret is to Witherbloom, because you don't know if people ahead of you have picked Witherbloom rares, Witherbloom uncommons. So I've made a resolution for myself that I am no longer choosing a college based on common gold cards.
Support for today's episode comes from Square, the business platform that helps sellers become neighborhood favorites. Whether you're gearing up for a busy season or just trying to keep up with everyday demand, Square keeps your business running smoothly, from payments and POS to online orders, inventory, staff, and more, all in one place so you can focus on your customers, not your to-do list.
Square works whether you're starting out or growing from one location to many. You can sell online, in-store, or both, and customize your setup as your business evolves.
My neighborhood has a sort of like two-block area of a bunch of local businesses. We've got a coffee shop. We've got a sort of corner store bodega situation. We've got a little like hole-in-the-wall pizza shop. And we've got a place where I get my haircut. And every other place but the place I get my haircut uses Square. And I always... always bothers me when I go to get my haircut and I'm like, oops, I forgot my checkbook. What year is it? And I go home and I get my checkbook and I bring it back. And I like it. They cut my hair very nicely, but I really wish that they got in the Square game because it just makes things so much more convenient at those other locations.
Square brings payments, POS, inventory, staffing, and online sales together in one system. So business owners don't have to juggle a bunch of tools. Their hardware and software are designed to be easy to use, so day-to-day operations feel simpler.
Square helps you run your business more smoothly, bringing payments, operations, and insights together in one place so you're ready for whatever's next.
Right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/LOL. That's square.com/go/LOL. Get started with Square and build a setup that works the way you do.
What about density? Like density pick 7, pick 8? Would that do it for you? Or does it have to basically wheel?
I think it has to almost wheel.
Well, because you're not guaranteed, especially if you're, I would assume Witherbloom's going to be, Witherbloom, spoiler, is still stocks up for me. I think it's still one of the best colleges. You can fight over Witherbloom with someone at the table and you both could have good decks, but you want to make sure you're not on the side of that where someone's getting all the good payoffs and you're taking all the Bogwater Lumerets and you're not doing anything with them.
That's the risk about going into the redundant synergy things early, because you don't know if you're going to get all the pieces. And if you don't get all the pieces to have a redundant synergistic plan, I think your deck largely falls flat.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, let's dive into the prepared of it all. We were hot and bothered about this mechanic. I am less hot and bothered about it.
Say more.
So I just think it is, I think I was viewing it as, and I do still think it's a cool, interesting mechanic. The thing that I have cooled about it on, as just as a mechanic in general, is that I think the prepared cards are way better when you're ahead or at parity than they are when you're behind. I think the mechanic intrinsically rewards being in a better position in the game. And there's already a lot of things in the format that do that. Like a lot of the, once the college synergies start coming together, they snowball pretty hard and they make it difficult to catch up. And I think prepared also then continues to reward the player that's ahead or if the game's at parity.
Yeah, that's fair. I think there were two takeaways for me. One was gameplay felt pretty complex because of all of the options. Like prepared just adds a level of, now I have 9 spells I can cast and a lot of them are cheap. So like usually it's like, just be the most mana efficient. I have 5 mana. I'll do a 3 plus a 2, but it's like, you could do 3 plus 2. You could do 2 plus 2 plus 1. You could do, you know, like I felt myself thinking a lot about how I could maneuver my hand the best because of prepared cards and flashback cards, honestly, being in the mix as well. There's just a lot of zones where you have access to spells. But the other thing that I really feel like I need to internalize for myself is that the creature just has to be good up front. You just have to like be okay with the creature and not just like, but if I get the creature and then get to cast the spell and everything goes right, then I'll be really ahead, or then I'm going to be really happy with this as a card. If you're not happy with the creature up front, I think the card falls flat a little bit. That's my take on prepared.
Yeah, I think Landscape Painter illustrates that very well. This is the 1 and a blue 2/1 that enters prepared. It's Prepared spell is Vibrant Idea, 4 and a blue for a sorcery to draw 2 cards. That ranges from literally Goblin Piker, 2 mana, 2/1, to maybe an actual 3/1 if you can trade that off after you've prepared it. But that's magical Christmas land. Like, once you've prepared it, a 2/1 largely isn't relevant. But if you're ahead, like, Landscape Painter is really good for you. But if you're behind, it is atrocious.
Well, the other thing that Landscape Painter does is that its prepared spell interacts very favorably with both of its colleges. You get a 5-drop for increment. You get a 5-mana play for Opus as well. That's pretty good. But if we're playing greater garbage today with Landscape Painter, I'm giving Landscape Painter garbage.
I'm also giving Landscape Painter garbage.
It's filler.
But just to kind of put a bow on prepared or this discussion, I think the common prepared creatures, largely outside of the white 1-drop, 1/2, which I think you're down on, that comes in with the 1 and a white prepared spell to tap or untap something at sorcery speed, draw a card. That one is excellent. But largely the common creatures outside of that with prepared have not been particularly impressive to me. Your Gravedigger situationally can be extremely oppressive also.
I'm not down on it. I don't. What makes you say I'm down on it? I just think it's...
I thought you put a note there in the show notes that you weren't really impressed by.
I'm not impressed by the 3 and a white 3/3 that makes a 1/1.
I had the names mixed up. Excuse me for slandering your position.
Elite Interceptor. Elite, I will say, Interceptor played worse than I expected. The 1-drop with the prepared tap or untap draw card. Just like sorcery speed on that is much worse than our usual Inspector that 1/2 that makes a clue. But if you get a little bit of repartee upside with that trigger, it kind of helps balance that out a little bit. But Elite Interceptor is still, I agree, it's a common that matters for sure.
So gameplay, I don't know how it felt to you. Games felt pretty snowball-y for me when someone popped off with a college's like designated synergistic plan. Like Witherbloom can do some truly stupid things. If it curves out with a 2-drop life gainer into 3-drop, 4-drop that care about the life gain synergy, that you can do some ridiculous things. Similarly, Prismari plays the whale, like the uncommon whale, the 2-blue-red 1/4, and you don't kill it on sight, and then it turns into a 4/7, maybe a 7/7 if they're double spelling, have some treasures around. Like that card is also extremely stupid.
And all 5 colleges can do that. They all have snowball-y mechanics because like the Opus stuff either threatens to activate or actually does and pops off. Increment just sort of is snowball the mechanic. Repartee, if you can do the early aggressive thing and get your repartee benefits, like they all have the possibility to snowball from jump. But I also found games being pretty grindy. Like the life gain of it all does make you have to grind, I think, in this format. And then that sort of tips the scales away from some colors and towards some other colors, because I do think some colors can grind into the late game a lot better than others.
You're talking in a lot of pronouns. Can we get some colors that you think grind better than some other colors?
I'm pretty down on white after this week. And I played a lot of Silverquill and Lorehold, even after wanting, like trying to not, like white just kept being open. Those colleges were open in early access for me. And I felt like you kind of just have to draft the open colors or color pairs in this format, and I did not find a lot of success with the white aggro decks.
That's interesting, because that's the only thing I found success with.
I could have been doing it wrong or whatever. There's a lot of caveats here, or don't want to over index on early access, blah blah blah, but the white decks felt underpowered to me based on what I was seeing from blue red certainly and black green.
The thing that I felt about white was, one of the things we talked about in the crash course was, well, it seems kind of split between Silverquill and Lorehold, and the cards go half and half. And I think white's best cards all want to attack. So I think white is pointed in more of a one direction route than we thought go headed into the crash course.
As a result, a Johnny's response is a pretty big mover down for me. That's the 4 and a white, destroy a creature, but costs 3 less to cast if it targets a tapped creature. I just didn't find that card to be that important. And, you know, if there's a 4-color white control deck out there that we're going to find in a few weeks, awesome. A Johnny's response will be back on the menu. But for now, I think it's pretty filler interaction.
So I did have some white Lorehold aggressive decks that went quite well for me, and that had just good cards, good aggressive game plan, and was able to close out the game before some of the the Prismari can play like a very impressive late game, or I was able to get underneath Witherbloom before it got its juices flowing, you know?
Yeah, and which feels like a throwback to original Strixhaven, where like Lorehold's doing this cute graveyard thing, but what you actually are going to find success with is just curving out and beating down.
Yeah, I think you're largely supposed to ignore Lorehold's thing.
So like, annoying!
You're supposed to play flashback spells that are good, but I don't think you're not supposed to try to get any sort of leaves engine. The graveyard stuff going. Yeah, no, well,
because engine. I think when you get into that spot, you're like, I would like to play in the late game, and blue decks are just like, good luck. Witherbloom decks are like, good luck. Like, what are you gonna do in the late game when I'm gaining a bunch of life and playing, you know, 6/6 beaters? Lorehold just can't really compete.
And Silver Quill, I think, again, like, if Repartee happens, great. If it doesn't, fine. Like, you're again just playing largely good cards, aggressive game plan, interaction, trying to keep your opponent off balance. And I think when Repartee is really dumb is when you're triggering it with removal spells more than like trying to target your stuff.
Prismari, I think, is my number one college, despite not really getting to play with it, but playing against it, I found it very impressive.
I was most impressed by the Prismari decks that had a play pattern of like turns one and two, let me play some of the good cheap interaction that Prismari has and not play the clunky small creatures. Play relevant 3 and 4 drop creatures and then just back that up with spells.
Yeah. And Quandrix is still a question mark for us, unfortunately. Like, I played against it a little bit. I played a bad version of it that I'm not going to give any sort of impressions of. but I still like a lot of the green cards I like, and now I like a lot of the blue cards. So I'm going to imagine that Quandrix is good as long as you're not trying to do the fractal stuff.
Yeah, I could certainly see that.
Like, increment is just going to happen, and something like Cube Colony is just going to be a good card. Like, Cube Colony was also just a good top deck thanks to prepared spells being incidentally tacked on to things. I think any of the other stuff, like, what's the Fractal Tender, the 3 green blue, 3/3, ward 2, at the beginning of your end step, if a counter was put on it, then you get to make a 3/3 fractal. Like, no, thank you. That card is atrocious.
The cards that need several things to fall into place, I think generally just are not worth it.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, let's get into a revised notable commons list to just kind of touch base with where the colors are. I think white, 2 cards are relevant. Elite Interceptor, that's the 1 mana 1/2, and has the Repartee Rejoinder, 1 and a white. You can tap or untap target creature at sorcery speed, draw a card. Card was extremely impressive, held up. I loved Eager Glyph Mage, so I'm surprised to hear that you were down on the card. It's 3 and a white, 3/3, when it enters, create a 1/1 black and white Inkling creature token flying. I also, though, had a lot of cool rares. Like, I was popping off with there's a rare that's red white for a 2/2, and when you cast an instant or sorcery spell, if you tap 3 untapped creatures, you get a copy it. I had that in several of my Boros drafts.
I do think Eager Glyph Mage is more a secret Lorehold card than it is. I don't think you want it in Silver Quill. Lorehold has quite a bit of go wide stuff, whether it's caring about tokens, whether it's tapping 3 things to flash something back, or if you've got the rare you talked about. Lorehold Charm gives your team +1/+1 and trample as a mode. Like, Lorehold has a lot of ways to use multiple bodies. I just found that the 4-drop slot was a dime a dozen, and I would much prefer to have a college specific 4-drop in there if I could. Like, if I can get the Sloth, the 2 red white, 4/4 trample, lifelink, exile something every turn in my 4-drop slot instead, I'm going to want that. In Silver Quill, if I can get the 4-mana exile removal spell, I'm going to want that. Like, I don't think Eager Glyph Mage belongs on the commons that matter list, if that's how I feel about it.
Despite loving blue, I still only have the 1 blue card on this list, which is Run Behind. Do you think Essence Scatter should be on this list? I just didn't see Scatter from early access.
Essence Scatter seemed great. And not only did I, but it's not that I saw it a lot, but it was in my mind a lot. Like, anytime I cast a 4 or 5 drop, I was like, they have Essence Scatter, game's over.
Game's over.
Like, that's how I felt. Not that it often got by it, but it made me think that Essence Scatter was quite good.
Okay.
Similarly, I did not see Run Behind. Run Behind was good.
Run Behind was impressive. Yeah, like, especially for Prismari, because red doesn't have ways to get things, big things, off the battlefield as easily. So I think a copy or two of Run Behind goes a fair way.
Yep. Okay.
Last Gasp was extremely impressive. That's the one on a black instant. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. Just being able to interact with your opponent's 2-drop or 3-drop or trade up on mana with their 3-drop was extremely impressive.
Mm-hmm. We got Wander Off on here as well. The 3 and a black instant exile target creature. Loved that card.
I think this next one is my pick for the best common in the format, which is Tome Blast. 1 and a red. Sorcery deals 2 damage to any target. It's got Flashback, 4 and a red. If your opponent kills your 2-drop with Tome Blast, like, it's so oppressive. Like, you just feel like, especially if you're trying to be aggressive. Like, if you play a 2-drop and you're trying to be aggressive and your opponent Tome Blasts it, it's so deflating. And it feels like there's a line to me in the format of creatures that die to Tome Blast and creatures that don't die to Tome Blast.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Tome Blast is awesome. Well, and especially like that you get to have the 2 removal spells, but also that it interacts so favorably in a synergistic way without asking you to jump through any hoops. It's like, oh, you want something to leave the graveyard? I can do that. Oh, you want something that costs 5 mana? I got you. But I'm doing it because I'm a good card, not because I'm some trinkety thing.
And then Unsubtle Mockery, the titular card of the episode, the Bombard variant, 2 and a red instant, deals 4 damage to target creature, and you surveil 1.
This is just a great card. Like the library manipulation was very good.
But also, say that louder for the kids in the back?
No, I'm not going to say it. They can rewind if they want. You get one. But the surveil 1 in Lorehold was actually pretty helpful in terms of there's not a lot of ways to fill your graveyard. Like if you're looking to do the leave the graveyard stuff, getting stuff in the graveyard wasn't trivial.
Well, you almost have to do it via looting, but the looting cards are all so finicky.
Well, I'll be dead in the cold ground before I put that tormenting voice variant in my deck, but I feel like I have to.
Burak Barrage up next. This is moving into the list for me. This is 1 and a green for the instant. Target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn if you've cast another instant or sorcery spell, and then it deals damage equal to its power up to 1 target creature and opponent controls. This is moving in largely on the back of me being very impressed by the 2-drop, the 1 and a green, 1/2 death touch that taps to add a green. Mm. Those two cards just play so nicely together.
Yeah, I did like that card.
Grapple with Death, that's the Witherbloom, 1 black green sorcery, destroy an artifact or creature, gain a life, and then insanely impressed by Wilt in the Heat from Lorehold. 2 red, white, instant. Cost 2 less to cast if 1 or more cards left your graveyard this turn, and it deals 5 damage to target creature. If the creature would die, exile it instead. You're fine casting this for 4 mana, and when you do get to randomly do it for 2 mana, it is broken.
And looking at this list now, let's say we swap Essence Scatter for Eager Glyph Mage. That's 9 interactive spells.
It's all interaction, and white is creatures, which I think checks out with my experience.
And that's been a lot of what we've seen in the play booster era. Like outside of maybe, I don't know, Final Fantasy, like commons mattering outside of interaction. Like this is where you get your interaction, and then you're getting your synergy pieces, your glue pieces, your I need to fill in the gap pieces.
It's sad though, like how bad so many of the commons are. Like after these 10, like there's just a gaping wide gap between these cards. And there's like a small subset of others that you're like fine to play. But if you're having to find your direction in a draft via commons, it's so difficult to find where you're supposed to be.
Cards we have questions about. Embrace the Paradox. This is 3 green blue for an instant. Draw 3 cards. You may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. I played a lot of white decks, and it felt very bad seeing this card cast if I wasn't closing the door next turn.
I think with a good white deck, you ideally would be wanting to see your opponent turn 5 play Embrace the Paradox, right?
If you're killing them next turn, you're not guaranteed. I don't know, man. Like it's hard with the amount of incidental life gain that green gets access to, and certainly black green. It just felt hard. I mean, I guess it'll remain to be seen. Maybe it's my bad aggro user error, but I did not feel like the white decks could close the door that quickly before the green decks pulled ahead.
So the other question I have about this card is it's obviously a powerful Magic the Gathering card, right? If you're ahead or at parity, the card's excellent. Mm-hmm. It felt like one of the things we talked about with Prepared was that you just don't run out of things to do. I definitely did not feel like I generally ran out of things to do. Mm-hmm. What I felt like was that my plays weren't powerful enough. That was more the issue that I was having when I was losing wasn't like, well, I can't cast any spells. It was just like, well, the spells I'm casting aren't impactful enough. And taking turn five off, I'm very curious to see how Embrace the Paradox ends up. I just have no baseline for it right now.
I would be surprised if it ended up mattering, but I don't think, like, I think that's filler plus is how I would categorize it. Like, it's never a pull into Quandrix. You're going to want burst card draw in some way to get a big chunk of resources, but it doesn't have to be from Embrace the Paradox.
One of the things that we didn't really talk about with gameplay, as far as ways to lose games, there's this weird thing that happened to me in quite a lot of games where my opponents, I don't know if they just played way better cards than me, but like with some cards that I thought weren't even that good, like they would go like two drop that 1/2 death toucher, play a four drop, play a five drop, play a six drop. And then they were just doing way bigger things to me. Maybe that's what you're talking about with white not being able to compete in the late game. Like I just felt like sometimes I just got way outclassed by how big or impactful of spells my opponent was playing. But then when I tried to do that, I got punished for not having a bottom end of my curve consistently. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know if that is helpful information at all, but it just felt like I was randomly losing games in weird ways sometimes.
Yeah. No, I just felt I never got to do it from the other side, but I definitely felt the thing you're talking about as playing Loreholder Silverquill, which was that opponent goes, starts ramping and does the bigger things quicker. Felt very hard to go through. Like if I had a plan of like, I'm going to get some Inkling tokens and I'll just peck away in the air. Then they're like, I have a big Flying Fractal, or I have a big Reach Sloth that's going to die into pests. And you're like, all right, I don't know what to do about that.
Right. That, or even the 4/5 Vigilance, like the common that has ward.
The Cactarantula.
That card was hard to get through at times.
I agree. Green is good. What else will you learn on this podcast from us? You will learn that Studia's first year was not good. This is the single green 1/1 with a Rampant Growth prepared spell. Yeah, you say feels like more of a Converge enabler. I don't even know if it does enough as a Converge enabler for you. And it made me think about, like, comparing this to, say, it's not maybe a fair comparison because it's an uncommon, the 3-mana vehicle. It's a 3/2 flyer that when it enters, you search for a basic and put it into your hand and has crew 2. Like, 2-for-1s up front like that are just so much better than when you're trying to do the 2-for-1s tacked on to prepared creatures.
Well, it's just more reliable. But for example, to compare Studia's first year to the 1 in a green 1/2 death touch at a green, the death toucher is significantly better than Studia's first year, I think.
I agree. That's my take currently as well.
Because it's just more of a relevant card. It does a similar thing while being a relevant card.
Well, and I also think like 9 times out of 10, you should just be Quandrix or Witherbloom. Maybe it's more. Maybe it's 19 out of 20 or something. Like, and so if we're saying, well, Studia's first year is a good enabler for the Converge decks or whatever, I don't think you should be drafting that deck very often.
I don't know. I think there's room in high power drafts to play 3-4 color, here's all my great cards that are way better than yours decks.
I guess. I mean, I guess that's going to happen in best of one, but that's not ever going to happen at the PT or in a single elim, right?
Maybe Snarlsong is enough to get you there. I just played against some decks. Like Amaz totally smashed me with a 4-color Snarlsong deck, and I watched Lola draft. I mean, like, now, granted, his first 4 picks were like better than every card I saw in six drafts when he did that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I think, don't want to close the door to, well, 19 out of 20 times you should be Quandrix. I think there is stuff there in high powered drafts.
I think if you are a 2-color deck, I don't think Studia's first year should ever be in your deck. That's my take.
Rubble Rouser, I'm curious about. This is your boy, the 2 in a red, 1/4. When it enters, you can discard a card. If you do, draw a card. Tap to exile a card from your graveyard, add a red. When you do, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent. This kind of does everything for you, right? It gets you a card in the yard. It lets you exile a card from the yard. It ramps you. I still kind of feel like this doesn't do enough somehow, which feels crazy to say out loud because the card does so much. But all of the stuff it does still doesn't feel like it meets the barrier to entry for I can compete on power level in this format.
The one choke point I felt with this card was that it was weirdly hard to get stuff into the yard. Like, this wasn't a consistent mana dork. And sometimes the thing about the leaves, the graveyard stuff is there's a timing aspect of it. Like, I had situations where I had my Rubble Rouser and I'm like, I'm going to discard the 3-drop that I want to reanimate with your 5-mana enchantment, the 5-mana enchantment that like returns a 3-mana thing. And then if something's left your yard at the end of your turn, you draw a card. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, but I need another thing in the yard so that I can ramp that on turn 4 and still have the thing that I pitched with Rubble Rouser. Like, it was just a little, if I just could, and if that happened, you're in a bad spot because your opponent is going to be working less hard to kill you than that. But I, yes. I think Rubble Rouser is still, it's not a common that matters. I still think it's going to be a good player in both Prismari and Lorehold decks.
I don't think it's any good at all in Lorehold. I think Lorehold has to get the game over stacked.
Ugh,
I think it's a Prismari card if it's anything.
All right.
I don't think it's a card in Lorehold. Send in the Pest. This is the Virus Beetle variant. This is 1 and a black for a sorcery. Each opponent discards a card and you make a 1/1 pest that whenever it attacks, you gain a life. I think this gets a knock because of Flashback. And similar to what I was talking about with Bogwater Lumeret, like, you can't go into Witherbloom because of Send in the Pest. You need to get Send in the Pest because Witherbloom's open, because Silverquill has zero interest in Send in the Pest, I think.
I agree with that. Yeah, it's not like, it just doesn't do anything in that deck. Lewin Exchange Student. This is the Witherbloom prepared uncommon. 2 black-green for a 3/4, enters prepared. The prepared spell is Pest Friend, which is a black-green hybrid to make a pest. And you can exile a creature from your graveyard to have Lewin become prepared at sorcery speed. I'm not as high on this. I saw it once, but the choke point is there is not a lot of ways to get stuff into your graveyard incidentally. And black has a ton of recursion. And so you have a bit of tension of like, am I really going to exile this creature now to make a pest when I could draw my double raised dead or get a raised dead prepared spell or the uncommon that reanimates things with repartee? Like, there's just a lot of ways that black has to get creatures out of the yard that there's tension with Lewin.
Last card on this list is Mind Roots. This is 1 black-green for the sorcery. Target player discards 2 cards. Put up to 1 land card discarded this way onto the battlefield, tapped under your control. I beat it with Boros Aggro the one time it was cast against me, but I did not enjoy having it cast against me at all. Like, it felt very bad having it cast against me.
I had this cast against me quite a few times, and I never liked it. I even had it cast against me when I got to discard 2 copies of, gosh, where is it? Killian's Confidence, which is the Silverquill spell that you can get back with a Silverquill hybrid
if you
connect with your opponent. So I was like, I can pitch 2 of these and I'll get them back later. Still didn't love having to discard those 2 to get them back later instead of being able to cast them to cantrip and grow my creatures. So
where does this land? Is this a pull into Witherbloom for you currently? Like, is it B minus? Is it B? Is it a C plus?
I'm going to start with it there. Yeah, I'm going to start with it at B minus.
Pulling you into Witherbloom. I would buy it. I don't think that's crazy. I think landing on a spot for Mind Roots, I think, will give me a lot of information about the format. Because I right now, I do think there's decks that can play either like a Last Gasp into Mind Roots or a relevant 2-drop into Mind Roots into just good chonky donkers.
Yes.
That's really hard for some decks to beat. All right, some specific cards that we have less questions on, just movers up. Rehearsed Debater, I was extremely impressed by out of white decks. This is 2 and a white for a 3/3 vigilance. When you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it targets a creature. This creature gets +2/+1/+1 until end of turn. It basically attacks as a 4/4 vigilance for 3 because your opponent has to be worried about either you playing a trick or, you know, you firing off a removal spell on one of their creatures and then growing this into a 4/4. I think it's a way above average 3-drop, and the vigilance making it play offense and defense also felt excellent.
I was similarly impressed by Expressive Fire Dancer, the 1 and a red 2/2 common with Opus. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it gets ++1 until end of turn. And if 5 or more mana was spent to cast it, it gains double strike until end of turn. Felt very hard to block this on the first few turns of the game. Like I play a 2/3, my opponent goes, cool, untap, attack with Expressive Fire Dancer. Like, what am I supposed to do? Snap block and you play Quick Study and you just eat my creature for free. Like, puts you in a pretty bad spot, I found.
Yeah, and along with that, we kind of poo-pooed Deluge Virtuoso, which is the 2 and a blue 2/2 Frostlings that tap something down. Opus gets plus one, plus one. And five mana gets +2/+2. I was really impressed in a very similar way with Deluge Virtuoso from Prismari. Like, it just punched above its weight class.
Because of prowess, yeah. It's basically prowess. Okay. Quillblade Laureate, point for Ben. 1 and a white, 1/1, double strike, enters prepared. Prepared spell is twofold intent. Target creature gets +1/+0 and gains double strike until end of turn. This is definitely a top three white uncommon, I think. Was very impressed by this. For all the reasons you said, it gets targeted very well. It comes with a way to target. And the way to target often plays out like, oops, now my 3/3 is a 4/3 double striker and you don't want to...
You can either take 8 and I'm happy, or you can chump block and I'm happy, yeah.
Exactly. And that was a pretty common play pattern for this.
Well, and a very similar card that is a mover down for me is Ennis Debate Moderator, which is 1 and a white for the 1/1 uncommon, enters, exile up to 1 of the target creature you control, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. At the beginning of your end step, if one or more cards were put into exile this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Ennis. I think like these two cards are a very good litmus test to think about white. Like Quillblade Laureate comes down on turn two, it pressures, it has a spell that lets you target, and it helps other creatures pressure. Ennis does not come down on turn two, unless you curve into it with the 1 mana 1/2 prepared spell. But even then, you have to play the prepared spell first. But Ennis never comes down on turn two.
I just like, as you were reading all the text of Ennis, I just saw like the buffering like circle where I'm like, yeah. Just like, just give me a minute, just let me do the thing, and then I'll be right there with you. And it's like, no, Ennis, no one has time for you.
But I think for people who might not have played with the cards yet, or maybe you've only pre-released, those two cards, like white decks, I think almost don't want to put Ennis in their deck ever. And the Quillblade Laureate is absolutely premium. And it's the thing I was talking about, of Ennis is asking you to, well, if I just get a way to bounce something paired with this, and then that can live, and I can just play my Ennis and do this thing, and then boom, I got some synergy and I got to bounce your creature twice, which is just below. You did all this stuff to be below the barrier to entry power level interaction for the format.
Storing Stone Glider impressed me. This is the 2 and a white 4/3 flying Vigi uncommon. As an additional cost to cast it, you exile 2 cards from your yard or pay 1 and a white. It's really easy to double spell with this on later turns. If you could even just pay 5 mana, you might just want to exile stuff to trigger graveyard leaves. And it works really well. The Wombo combo is primary research. The 4 and a white enchantment that gets back a 3-drop and draws a card every time something leaves the yard. Primary research getting back Stone Glider is big game.
I think I'm a little down on primary research after playing with white. Like, what you're describing there doesn't sound like what white wants to do to me.
I agree. I think primary research is a cool, fun thing to do and like a tier 2 competitive thing to do. I think Soaring Stone Glider is good enough, was what I found. I found a 4/3 flyer for 5, or sometimes when you get to double spell and play it, that it's very impactful. I think Stone Glider was good.
Tackle Artist. It's 3 and a red for a 4/3 trample. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a +1/+1 counter on it. And if 5 or more mana was spent to cast a spell, put 2 +1/+1 counters on it instead. This isn't a class of cards that, like, if you untap with it, is a gigantic problem. It's like the whale, the 2 blue red 1/4 whale, but a toned down version of it, but still a relevant common, I think, for Prismari decks. So if you need stuff in the 4-drop slot, which you probably won't, but I was impressed with Tackle Artist that survived.
Filler plus is what Tackle Artist has to be. Yeah. Terrafractal is here. That's X green blue for a 1/0 flyer, comes in with +1/+1 counters on it. And when this creature enters, you gain 2 life. Scales nicely with the game. And again, interacts like really favorably with increment, like as a bonus, the fact that the scales like that. Like, I think you're much more happy with this as a top deck than you are with this as a 3 mana 2/1 flyer that gained you life, but you'll take it.
But it's not embarrassing. Like, the fact that it's playable everywhere. Like, it's playable on 3, it's playable on 4, and then just gets kind of ridiculous later in the game. It was impressive.
Encouraging Aviator is on the list for me. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/3 flyer. When it attacks, it becomes prepared. Its prepared spell is Jump, which is an instant target creature gains flying until end of turn. I had basically shortcutted this in my head to like, well, isn't this similar to, you know, white always gets these 3 mana 1/3 flyers when it attacks, something else can attack as a flyer. Yeah. What I didn't realize that this card lets you do is you can bank the one jump. So you attack, it becomes prepared, you bank that jump, then next turn...
Like a tapper?
Next turn, you jump a creature, attack with this, you get it becomes prepared, creature. And then you jump another thing and you can attack with 3 flyers in that turn, which is pretty explosive. Plus, this has 2 power, and usually this kind of effect is a 1 power flyer. The Aviator was impressive to me.
So in Prismari decks, in Quandrix decks, in both?
I mean, I would assume still... Quandrix likes it because
big green
flying,
creatures
getting your big green creatures in the air is good, but it doesn't interact like a 1 mana play is not interacting with your increment stuff that well. But the 1 mana repeatable Opus trigger that Encouraging Aviator gives your Prismari decks is really good.
Just compare Encouraging Aviator again to Ennis. Like it, Encouraging Aviator asks nothing of you and gives you a lot. Like there's no hoops needed to jump through there. Did you find that Prismari decks that you played against were lower curve and more aggressive? Because I played against bigger Prismari decks quite a bit.
I don't know. It's all a blur of losing to Prismari decks. Prismari. Whether it happened on turn 6 or turn 10, I can't tell you, but it definitely happened.
Fair enough. Melancholic Poet. This is 1 and a black for a 2/2 repartee. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets a creature, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. I was kind of impressed with this card from an opponent, and I would have thought it was nothing, and now I'm kind of on the filler plus life for this, I think, because it works in both black decks. Witherbloom wants it, and I think it does enough in Silverquill.
Interesting. I would have thought the reverse, that this would be better in Silverquill and Witherbloom wouldn't want it. I guess you're saying
it basically gives your Witherbloom. It's like a
it gives your
removal spell the Bogwater Lumeret text.
Yeah, that can't be good enough. I hear you being impressed by it. I was impressed by it in a package of with that like the bloodletting prepared spell. Like black just had a lot of little bits of ways to drain stuff. Sort of what I was envisioning with Rakdos seemed to just inherently exist in black, and Melancholic Poet was a part of that.
Dissection Practice is up next. This is a single black instant. Target opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. Up to 1 target creature gets +1/+1, and up to 1 other target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Talk to me about this card.
Single mana that interacts with both of black's things, like triggers repartee, triggers your life gain matters stuff, can be a big combat blowout, and all for 1 mana. This card was impressive to me.
Impressive enough that like it's a pull into black or just a very, very, very good C+.
No, but I'd give it a C+. Yeah, exactly.
Summoned Dromedary, your boy, 3 and a white for a 4/3 vigilance. You can pay 1 and a white to return this card from your graveyard to your hand. Activate only as a sorcery. This was pretty impressive in Jeskai, a late game deck for my opponent as a looting / rummaging engine. Like just never casting it, but pitching it to the rummage, 1 and a white, buy it back, pitch it to rummage, 1 and a white, buy it back, pitch it to rummage, 1 and a white, buy it back. It was a very nice late game engine card for a Jeskai deck.
Okay. Seems like I'm seeing another wheel spinning buffering thing happening, but maybe Jeskai does it better than the white decks.
Fractalize. This was something that's surprised me that I'd not thought about, which I probably should have, I guess, as a use case for this card. But Fractalize is blue X uncommon instant. Until end of turn, target creature becomes a green and blue fractal with base power and toughness, each equal to X+1. And I was only viewing this as an offensive trick for your creatures, but I think almost a better use case for it is that if you just play it for blue, it shrinks your opponent's creatures into a 1/1. And I was only thinking about this as growing my own creatures. I think it's a much more versatile card than I thought it was.
Next up, we have Eternal Student. That's 3 and a black for a 4/2. You can pay 1 and a black to exile it from your yard to make 2 1/1 white and black inkling creature tokens with flying.
At instant speed. Like, this card is beyond dumb. Like, this card is broken in half.
I kept expecting. I read this card over and over again. I kept expecting to see the word Tapped. I kept expecting them to enter Tapped. It's like, nope. Instant speed 2-1-1 flyers.
Did you know that they came in at instant speed when we were evaluating this card?
I did.
I did not.
But similarly, kept reading like act. I'm like, where does it say activate only as a sorcery? Where does it say they enter Tapped? And it just didn't.
Like I tweeted about this, and somebody from Wizards like commented on the tweet that was like, "Well, we feel like at uncommon, this sort of effect is fine." No. Like, give me a.
And you were like,
break.
"Wrong. You're fired."
It was like, what? How? That just breaks everything they've ever done about this. Like, hidden in the graveyard, you could be. Like tucking this down underneath three other cards or whatever and just boom, flashing those 2-1-1 flyer. Like the complexity level for paper for this, like having to remember that it's there and could be instant speed. Snarl Song, we've talked a lot about. I think it's the real deal for the Converge payoffs. This is the 5 and a green, create 2 fractals equal to the Converge mana, different numbers of mana spent, and then you put X plus one counters on them and gain X life.
Yeah. Similarly, I heard scuttle, did not see cast, but heard scuttle about Arcane Omens being the real deal. This is the 4 and a black.
That scuttle.
This is the 4. I don't know. With how much I liked Mind Roots, I think Arcane Omens could be the real deal. The 4 and a black sorcery converge. Target player discards X cards equal to the number of colors of mana spent to cast this spell. You can poo-poo that take. I'm just saying what I heard. I'm gathering the information.
Gathering the information. I love it.
Additive Evolution was impressive to me. 3 green for the enchantment. This makes a 3/3 fractal, and at the beginning of combat on your turn, you put a counter on a creature you control. It gains vigilance until end of turn. Snowbally enables attacks and blocks. Additive Evolution, I think, played out much less clunky than I thought it would on reading this.
Yeah, I mean, it's 5 mana 4/4 with upside.
Yes, yeah, significant upside.
Infirmary Healer up next. This is 1 and a green for a 2/3 enters prepared and has the prepared spell Stream of Life. Green X sorcery target player gains X life. I love Stream of Life as a magic card from when I was a child.
You're lucky because you're going to get to cast it a lot this format because this is a good card. This is just a good rate 2 drop that then randomly is like, it's probably going to stick around. And so you're probably going to get to cast Stream of Life for 4 or 5 later on in the game, which is a huge chunk of life that is going to trigger your life gain matter stuff. That's going to trigger your increment, however you want it to. Could trigger Opus as a random 5 mana spell. Like, and again, just compare this to poor Ennis getting just kicked this whole episode. But this card asks nothing of you and does a lot.
I think that, that's the take. The biggest takeaway from early access for me is I want my cards to not ask stuff of me unless I'm very sure I can always do the things that they are asking of me.
But it doesn't mean I don't want synergy, because something like Infirmary Healer or something like the Flyer, the Encouraging
Aviator, those are synergistic. Yeah.
They have the potential to be extremely synergistic, but their floor is like, no, this is just good. And that's what I want for my cards. Yeah.
Tenured Concoctor up next. This is a card we referenced earlier. This is 4 and a green for a 4/5 common with vigilance. When it becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card, and it's got infusion. This creature gets +2/+0 as long as you gained life this turn. So you were also impressed with this.
I might put this might make its way to commons that matter.
Whoa.
This card was really annoying to deal with.
I agree. I did not cast it, but I was very unhappy every time it was on the other side of the battlefield. So Is that another takeaway from this episode, that green's good, that we blew it
green
again?
Green is good. Which is why I don't feel like I know enough. Like, if I had to give my college power rankings right now, I would say Prismari 1, Witherbloom 2, Quandrix
3,
Silverquill 4, Lorehold 5.
Wow. It's so hard for me to put Quandrix that high.
I like green cards and I like blue cards. I don't like Quandrix's gold cards that much, but that can't be enough to knock it, because I think Quandrix has, or green and blue have, a good density of the kinds of cards we're talking about. I don't ask a lot of you, but I have a high ceiling. The thing about, like, we were getting some pushback of like, can't believe you guys were, like, from the Crash Course, can't believe you guys are so high on Witherbloom. Feels like there's A plus B synergies that have to come together. Like, they're so incidental a lot of the time. Your common kill spell says, oops, gain a life. Like, you don't have to it's compare it to some lore hold stuff where you're like, and then if I just get this in the yard and then I remove it and I do it at this time, then I get a 3/3 for 2 mana. Like, you're not doing that with Witherbloom.
But I also think in Laurel's defense, like, you're just like same as last time.
Ignore
all that and play all the cards that are like, kill your opponent now, please.
But like Lorehold's common 2-drop is like, I'm a bear, but if you do the thing, I can grow. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm like not really supposed to do the thing unless it's flashback.
Yeah, that card's not good for sure.
Right, but so that's it's just like when Lorehold's 2-drop is not good, like even Silverquill's 2-drop, the Repartee Flyer Surveil one, that's pretty darn good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Bogward or Lumeret, pretty darn good. Does Quandrix get a 2-drop? I forget. But like, there's just comparisons of like, does this ask you to do anything? Nope. And it's still good. Great. I want that in my deck. And I feel like Quandrix has a density of those cards.
Heard. Yes. Okay. Spectacular Skywell, we referenced a couple times, is 2BBF flyer. Opus, it gets +3/+0. Magnum Opus, it gets 3+1/+1 counters. That has to be killed on sight.
I agree. Similarly, Forum Necroscribe, 5BB for a 5/4 uncommon ward, discard a card. Repartee trigger, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Was this on your radar as a good card? It was not. Yeah. It was not for me.
It was on my radar for sure.
It is 6 mana, but it does a lot when it is on the battlefield.
Right. I mean, it demands to be answered, and even if they answer it, you're 2-for-1-ing them because they have to discard a card. Killian's Confidence, I was very impressed by. White-black for the sorcery. Target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Draw a card, and then if a creature you control connects with your opponent, you can pay a Silverquill hybrid to return it from your graveyard to your hand. Think this just like does everything Silverquill is trying to do. Helps push damage, helps the gas flow.
You said sneaky on Arena. Why is this sneaky on Arena?
Oh, sneaky on Arena because it doesn't like pop out as like a thing they can do from the graveyard. So if it sits in the graveyard for like 3 turns, you're going to forget it's there.
You forget about it.
And then you're like, I can let that pest hit me. And then it hits you and that Killian's pops confidence. Up and you're like, no, what am I? just remember that it's there if you see it.
Last one on this list is Diary of Dreams. This is 2 mana for the artifact book. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a page counter on this artifact and you can pay 5, tap, draw a card. It costs 1 less to activate for each page counter on this artifact. I think this might be a Sorcerer's Scheme style build around for like a lots of removal style control deck. And part of me just wants that to be true, but I from the games I played, I'm like higher on Diary of Dreams.
Well, to that point, I will say that I was pretty darn impressed with the Year of the Manolith Continues with Potioner's Trove, the 3 mana artifact that taps for a mana of any color or taps to gain 2 life, but you only activate if you've cast an instant or sorcery spell this turn.
Mm-hmm.
Like those two probably are going to go hand in hand if there is a like oops all removal control deck, because again, like if you're trying to aggro someone out and they're like, oops, I had a couple games where I was like, I almost got you dead. And they were like, two life. And then you're like, well, now the game's out of reach. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
I watched one of your games where you had your opponent at 1 and they clawed back with this card to 3 to 5 to 7 to 9. Mm-hmm. And you eventually conceded. It was very depressing.
It's very depressing. Yeah, I thought Potion's Trove was good.
One of the other things that coming from the Lords of Limited Discord, I think it was Mike in the Lords of Limited Discord with Potion's Trove from the pre-release, is that if you have spells that have infusion, you can cast the spell, hold priority, gain the life with the artifact, and then your spell will resolve with the infusion trigger.
Yes, very, very sneaky. A few movers down. You don't like the mana dork, huh? Hydro Channeler's on here. 1 and a blue, 1/3. Taps for blue for an instant or sorcery spell, or can filter mana of any color for an instant or sorcery spell.
I just don't think it's a relevant piece of cardboard. Like the green one ramps you and has death touch.
And has
like
death touch.
Once this is done ramping you, it just gets to be completely ignored, and it is not as consistently good at ramping you. I just don't think it meets the power level bar for the format.
I think that's true. And also, it's not like it plays defense that well on turn 2 because so many things
are huge in this things format.
Or they threaten to be big. Like what I'm saying, like if you attack your 2/2 that red 2/2 into this, what are you going to do when you're like, I really need the ramp into my four mana spell. Like, you're just not going to block.
Orisa Tide Choreographer. This is 4 and a blue for a 2/2. Costs 3 less to cast if creatures you control have total toughness 10 or greater. And when it enters, you draw 2 cards. This wasn't great for me. And it's very weirdly at the intersection of not relevant enough on board, not really synergistic because you're never getting 10 total toughness. Or if you are, you don't need to draw more cards. And it's also just not quite powerful enough for 5 mana somehow, despite looking a lot like Muldrifter. I was just very underwhelmed.
Does Landscape Painter do it better than Orisa? Because at least the draw 2 part of this is a spell also. And it's an actual 2-drop.
That's a wild comparison because Orisa was way higher in my head than, like, Landscape Painter, and I don't even like Landscape Painter.
How different are they?
They're not that different. You're very rarely playing Orisa for 2 mana.
Okay, that's a good shout. I didn't see that card. I still had it on my, like, top 3 blue uncommons, but it makes sense that it's not good enough. Because, like, it's on a flyer, so the 2-2 body just isn't relevant once you draw 2 cards. Like, you'd just rather have Quick Study, probably.
Probably, yeah. I'm not confident I'm right, but it just wasn't great, and I was trying to figure out why. So those are my musings.
Okay.
Pigment Wrangler, I do feel pretty confident about. Just 4 and a red for a 4/4 flyer, enters prepared, and its prepared spell is Striking Palette, which is single red for sorcery. When you next cast an instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You can choose new targets for the copy. This also weirdly doesn't feel good enough because it's like that what we keep talking about. You need several things to come together. You need to play Pigment Wrangler. You need to untap with it. You need to have saved an instant or sorcery spell to copy it with. And then you also need to have your opponent to have 2 things that you want to kill with that instant or sorcery. It's just a lot to come together. And that feels insane to say about Pigment Wrangler was that it didn't feel good enough, but it really didn't.
Were you not, again, to my litmus test of these prepared creatures, which is you have to be happy with the creature up front. So you were not happy with a 5-mana 4/4 flyer up front.
I don't think so. Or I didn't have the right cards around it to make me happy with a 5-mana 4/4 flyer. I just kept ending up behind with prepared creatures, and that feels horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last card on this list for me as a movers down is Molten Note. This is X red white for a sorcery, deals damage to target creature equal to the amount of mana spent to cast this spell. Untap all creatures you control, and it has flashback for 6 red white. Flashback 6 red white is a lot of mana. You're just like never casting that in Lorehold.
I don't know. I'm going to push back against that. I really like Molten Note. I play with it.
Can you tell me how that fits in your picture of Lorehold has to get the game over with, and how the heck are you casting this for flashback? I'm fine if you're like, hey, the first half of this card is good.
Yeah, the first half is good enough. Yeah. And it's 5% of the time, 10% of the time.
The first half of this card is fine. Is this on par with the list? This does not feel markedly different than the list of 9 removal spells we rattled off as commons that matter.
Correct. I think worse than Wilt in the Heat. Which is the 2 red white, hence, deal 5.
Hence, this is a mover down for me.
Mover down.
We had a question around, if flashback 6 red white on this card is real, then this is going to be awesome. It's not real.
And loose Jeskai maybe, but yeah.
Okay. All right, LSV. good to talk to you. Final thoughts before we get into the week of drafts, before this goes live on Tuesday?
I think the draft matters a lot in this format in a way that other formats haven't, which is like, I felt like when I was done with some drafts, I knew it hadn't gone well and it was just completely unsalvageable from that point. Do you know what I mean? Like, usually you can cobble together a deck that can kind of like do some stuff and get you to 3 wins. Like, I had some truly deflating feelings after the draft of like, I know this is bad and I cannot do anything to save it. So I think that there's a lot of ways to get yourself in unrecoverable spots in the draft.
Yes. So like, I want to just sort of say that you didn't feel like at the end of the draft, I knew it didn't go well and there was nothing I could do. You mean there's nothing you could do to salvage the deck from that point, but there were definitely things you could have done in the draft to not end up in that spot. Yes.
Correct. But once I ended up in that spot, it was like, yes. Well, like usually when there's a draft that kind of goes off the rails, you can like, well, I'll, curve out and play some tricks and maybe get some wins that way. Like, if you're going after the redundant synergy type stuff from the colleges and it doesn't come together, you just have a poop sandwich. It's really bad.
So
I think there's that aspect of it. I think knowing what the good cards are and asking your good cards to do stuff up front and not ask much else of you, while like the things you were talking about, like the stream of life card that is a good Magic card, it's gonna maybe provide you some incidental synergy. I think green being a big mover up, like that 4-5 vigilance, just playing with big bodies and being able to bully your opponents with big bodies.
I think I need to do some digging and searching in the trophy channel of our Discord and looking at 17 lands trophies to see like what do those good Lorehold and Silver Quill decks look like, so that when I am pushed into those colleges as my seats, I know what the correct build is. And I think it's probably going to be about marrying that other idea of just, I just want my cards to do their things on their own and to not over index on any synergies.
The other thing is once we have a better idea of where the cards are, like for example, what's the name of the 4-5 Cactuar Angela, Tenured Concoctor. Like if Tenured Concoctor is great, like that's not on my radar as a Magic the Gathering card at all, or at least wasn't like when I was drafting during early access. It wasn't until the end of early access where I was like, I kind of think that card's better than I thought it was. You know what I mean? Like if that's good, then all of a sudden you have more routes or more options to get into green decks or pivot off of. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I'm sure there are just paths through drafts that I was not seeing, but I don't think the format is like large enough that you can just steer towards stuff and ignore portions of the format. I think you are going to need all of the tools in your tool belt.
I agree. I agree with that. It did not feel like you could force your way into things very easily.
Yeah. All right. That's what I got. Those are my takes.
Let's do it.
On that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There is links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our merch, our Patreon page, if you want to check that out, all available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.